2 miles up along the Gironde River is one of the most famous wine villages of the Médoc, Saint-Estèphe, a name that symbolizes a big, heavy wine. Château Montrose, Château Cosdestournel, and Château Calonségur are the names of the three classic wines of this area. Now, what is it that makes this region of the Haut Médoc such a spectacular and historic area for the making of wine? Since the 15th century, and even before, it has been acknowledged as the supreme place for the growing of the grape. The soil is an ancient soil, and it is a gravelly one. To walk across one of the local vineyards is to walk across a pebbly, stony terrain. So first of all, it is the quality of the soil in this region which makes it so distinctive. Then there is climate. There is something absolutely entrancing about the air which blows in from the sea, many miles away, to mix with the clear and humid air which rises from the Gironde River basin. Then there is the force of the sun, which pierces this clarifying air to reach the growing vines. This, combined with the coolness of the nights, is what makes this area a magical place. In a good year, when all these elements combine in proper proportion, all of us in this region celebrate once again the vast miracle which takes place at harvest time. Bernard Gineste, the co-owner of Chateau Margaux, tells us of a typical menu served to his pickers at harvest.
First, the soup that we call the garbure, which is a soup with lard and bread and cauliflower and bacon and everything, yes. You see, and it is very good. Yes, also, charcuterie, you know, hams and sausages, yes.
That's only the beginning.
Yes, just the beginning, because there will be 3 or 4 other courses, such as the roasted ducks, and we put on a spit about 40 ducks in the same time. You know, during the harvest, we have about 12 to 15 women working in the kitchen, and we have a special room with a special kitchen for the cooking of the wine pickers.
And what comes after the duck?
After the duck, well, there are some other good things. For instance, a piece of beef with sauce, you know, that we call the bœuf mod or yes, something like that. And also a salad and a pie, pâté and so forth, and cheese, and also strawberries.
Now we must travel 15 or so miles northwest of Bordeaux to one of the great historic monuments of the area, the little town of Saint-Emilion. Here the fine wine which bears the name of this town is produced. Saint-Emilion is one of the most ancient and most picturesque places a traveler can possibly find. The red wines of Saint-Emilion are grown in an area not more than a few miles square. The base of the soil is pure solid rock, a spongy sort of rock to be sure, so that drainage is swift, yet the roots of the vines remain moist. The wines of Saint-Emilion are the fullest of all the Bordeaux wines. Their bouquet, however, is generally not the quality of the Médoc wines, nor are they equal in finesse. Nevertheless, they have an excellence all of their own. In 1961, Château Cheval Blanc produced one of the greatest Bordeaux on record. Adjoining Saint-Emilion is a district called Pomerol, whose wine is noted for its distinctive bouquet. It is generally agreed that although the best wine of Pomerol comes from Château Pétrus, many nearby vineyards can vie for top distinction. The wines of Pomerol have much of the quality of a fine Médoc. What distinguishes them, aside from their characteristic bouquet, is what we call their fatness. The wine fills the mouth, the result of natural glycerin. It is a big, soft wine without the piercing body of a Médoc or a fine Burgundy. To recapitulate now, what we call Bordeaux wines consists of those of the Médoc, of Margaux, Saint-Julien, Pauillac, Saint-Estèphe, all of which are part of the Médoc area. Then there are the wines of Saint-Emilion of Pomerol, which brings us to the remaining wines classified as Bordeaux, the Graves and the Sauternes. The vineyards of Graves extend for some 35 miles along the western bank of the Garonne River, but it is a narrow strip barely 5 miles wide. It is curious to leave the outskirts of the city of Bordeaux and suddenly in a suburb to come upon the greatest vineyard-producing Graves, Château Brion. There is both a white Graves and a red Graves. This vineyard of Château Brion was producing Bordeaux's greatest red wine in the Middle Ages, when the English called it claret, as they still do today. Here is a friend of mine, the Duke of Bedford, who who recalls what it was like to be a son in the great English house. Not in the Middle Ages, to be sure, but quite recently.
Tell me, Ian, when you were a boy at Woburn, what wines were served?
My always greatest memory were always of clarets. There seemed to have been always many more clarets that were drunk.
That's natural because of the tradition of that claret is held in all of the great homes.
But the terrible thing is that one never asked or questioned exactly what was being drunk. It was always the perfect match for whatever was happening. And
in decanters.
In decanters.
Yes.
Always in decanters. And now I've got a French wife, one sees the bottle.
We were discussing the wines of that section of Bordeaux called Grave, which literally means gravel. The abundance of gravel at the vineyards of Châteaubriant is often given as one of the reasons for the high quality of the wine it produces. Not only is drainage swift and thorough on this soil, but the porous pebbles act as a mulch and also as a reflector of the sun, sending its warmth upward toward the heavy bunches of grapes. Châteaubriant has a distinguished history. Talleyrand was once its owner, and after Napoleon was defeated, Talleyrand was sent to the Congress of Vienna in 1815 to discuss peace terms. Talleyrand was a wise old politician, and he used the art of wine and food to accomplish his diplomatic ends. His chef was the famous Carême. Talleyrand's wine came from his Châteaubriant. Serving his excellent food and his superb wines, Talleyrand gained great concessions for France at his dinner table during his sojourn in Vienna. It is interesting to note that the present owner of Châteaubriant is also a diplomat, an American, Douglas Dillon. This is what the growers of wine in the Bordeaux area fear most: a sudden heavy storm in autumn, and especially if the rain turns to ice. The hailstones can smash the vineyards disastrously, and so the grower must know just when to harvest his grapes. If he picks the grapes before they're fully ripe, their acidity will throw the wine out of balance. If he waits too long, the grapes may rot. A matter of a day or two can make all the difference in the world. This art of timing or judgment is best seen in the making of that glorious sweet wine called Sauterne. There is a final S to the word Sauterne. Though some American vineyards, who have no right to label their wine Sauterne, do so spelling the word without its final S. The village of Sauterne is the capital of the district where this wine is made, some 20 miles southeast of Bordeaux. And less than a mile up the long hill leading out of the village of Sauterne is the world-famous Château d'Yquem, Y-Q-U-E-M, Yquem. For centuries, this château has produced the greatest Sauterne. Harvest time at Château d'Yquem is a drama of thrilling suspense. What one witnesses is a race between the moment when the grape has achieved its state of being thoroughly overripe and the killing freezing rains which may sweep across the vineyards at any moment during this late autumn season. The growers in Sauterne pace their vineyards every day, gathering bunches of grapes and analyzing their sugar content in long test tubes. If the overripening is allowed to go too far, the bouquet of the wine will be lost. If the grape is picked too soon, the wine will lack that extra richness, the sugar and alcoholic content which the great Sauternes are expected to have. The grape must achieve what the French call pourriture noble, or the noble rot. You may have seen this noble rot on overripe grapes and call the grapes just plain rotten. But in Sauternes, with the appearance of this mold, the growers know that the moment of decision is fast approaching. The skins shrivel, the water content lessens, but at the same time, the sugar content of the grape increases. The natural pectins and glycerins increase, and it is this that gives the wine of Sauterne its celebrated suavité and smoothness, its unctuous richness, making it the greatest dessert wine of all. At harvest time, the grapes have collapsed, shriveled, and are covered with mold. Now they are picked carefully, not in clusters, but one by one. These grapes are not a pretty sight to behold. In fact, it's hard to imagine that from these objects, the golden nectar which is Sauterne will eventually arise. Now, you mustn't get the impression that Chateau d'Yquem is the only vineyard making Sauternes, but it is certainly one of the greatest. In the neighboring district of Barsac, excellent Sauternes is also made, and in certain years, the Sauternes of Barsac, notably the product of Chateau Climens and Chateau Coutet, even surpass Chateau d'Yquem. Sauternes is the only quality white wine that could be iced. Other delicate dry white wines, served at this icy temperature, would numb the taste of the wine. A great Sauternes is, I imagine, very close to what the ambrosia of the gods must have been. It warms the heart, loosens the tongue, and lightens the spirit, as indeed all fine wines do. Cognac is a brandy. That is a distillation of wine, and cognac is the most famous of brandies, the other being Armagnac. Cognac is found in a region northwest of Bordeaux. There is a town named Cognac, and the surrounding area also bears the same name. This fine brandy has become a symbol of the richness of civilized living. You inhale its heady aroma. You sip its poignant flavor, and life itself becomes a lovely thing to enjoy. Sometimes people forget that cognac is a product of the grape, since the final product is so far removed from the bouquet and taste of wine. A marvelous transformation takes place somewhere between the vineyard and the bottle of brandy you buy. I would almost say a transfiguration takes place, because the wine from which cognac is made is almost unpalatable. A local saying in the vineyards of cognac is that the best cognac comes from the worst wine. And yet the wine must be carefully made, for any fault in the wine will turn up in the cognac. Briefly, this is how cognac is made. The winemaking proceeds much as it does in other regions. But in cognac, the wine is not permitted to age. It is heated in a massive copper kettle. After a time, the distillation of the wine rises in a vapor. This is condensed by cooling, and a milky liquid is formed. The liquid goes through the same process. After a second distillation and some purification, the infant cognac, raw and unsophisticated, is at last ready for the special barrel in which it will be aged. I wanted to listen to my friend François Hein, who heads one of the famous houses devoted to the making of cognac.
Cognac is a brandy made out of wine, and wine coming from a very delimited area called the cognac area. Brandy can be made out of any kind of wine, but it is not cognac because it has to be made with the cognac wines. Why is our wines in the cognac districts different from the other wines? It is a question of climate and soil. The aging of cognac is taking place in oak wood casks. And we use, in this district, we use the oak from Limousin. Limousin is a part of France about 70, 80 miles east of here. The cognac is aging in contact with the oak wood and also in contact with air through the pores of the wood. And it is this combined action of wood and air on a newly made cognac that is giving the aging.
Here is the Duke of Montesquieu to talk to you about that other delightful brandy, Armagnac.
Pierre, what is the difference between cognac and Armagnac?
First of all, Armagnac is produced in Gascony. Secondly, the distillation is quite different. And the third point is that Armagnac is kept in oaks, corn in Gascony.
How about its production?
The whole Armagnac production is about 10% of the cognac.
How about its history?
History is a very old history. It's the oldest brandy of France. It was the brandy known in 1416 during the war between Armagnacs and Burgundies. And the history closer to us, Mousquetaires, always drank Armagnac for the great fires they had for the King of Fires.
Couché sous la treille, plus heureux qu'un roi, toujours ma bouteille à côté de moi. Jamais je m'embrouille, car chaque matin, je me débarbouille dans un verre de vin.
Joyeux enfant de la Bourgogne, je n'ai jamais eu de guignon. Quand je bois...
There's that song to remind me that I must tell you about the great wines of Burgundy. Burgundy is a region of France that stretches about 200 miles from the cathedral town of Auxerre, south of Fontainebleau, down to the outskirts of the city of Lyon. There's an old saying, port is for citizens, claret for gentlemen, champagne for duchesses, but Burgundy is for kings. Winemaking in Burgundy goes back more than 2,000 years. It is an ancient area, an ancient soil. At one time, Emperor Charlemagne owned vineyards in Burgundy. The system of ownership in the vineyards of Burgundy is quite different from that of Bordeaux. In Bordeaux, the more important vineyards belong to a chateau whose proprietor owns the vineyard. In Burgundy, there are no chateaus in the Bordeaux sense, and a man may own, and usually does, own bits and pieces of a number of widely scattered vineyards. If the owner bottles his own wine, thus safeguarding the authenticity of the wine, it is called estate bottling. It gives the same guarantee of authenticity that chateau bottling does in Bordeaux. In Burgundy, I myself own several acres of vineyards scattered in the Côte de Nuit, which produces excellent wine. One of the greatest of Burgundian vineyards is Chambertin, and its wines in a good year are difficult to surpass. The vineyards of Chambertin are grown on only 32 acres, but these 32 acres are world famous for the quality of wine they produce. But here I must add a note of caution. In Bordeaux, when you buy a Chateau bottled wine, you may be sure that you are getting the vintage marked on the label. It makes some people angry, but nevertheless it is true that in Burgundy wines may bear false labels of old vintages. It is, as I've said earlier, always better to buy estate bottlings of a reputable grower of wines, or the wines of a reliable shipper. In Burgundy, before the year 1936, a great deal of blending of wines took place. That is, the wine from the bulk-producing areas in southern France or from Algeria was mixed with wine bearing the great Burgundian names on the labels. The result was an indifferent wine, or even a mediocre one. The local governing boards, established after 1936, watched for frauds, but they still do occur. What the buyer must look for on the label is, of course, the stamp Appellation Contrôlée. Here is Monsieur Tinlot, an inspector of fraud for the Appellation Contrôlée, who will tell us about his duties.
Le service de la répression des fraudes est un service qui a pour mission de protéger les consommateurs contre...
An inspector for the prevention of frauds is charged with the responsibility of protecting the consumer against misrepresentations. I am the chief inspector of the southeast of France. The wine regions falling under my jurisdiction are the regions of the Beaujolais, the Savoie, and the Côte du Rhône. Controls are applied in two ways. One, by controlling the product itself. The inspectors take samples at the time the wines are offered for sale by the proprietors and or by the wholesale wine merchants. Experts taste the wines, and then a chemical analysis is made. The second method of control is the accounting method. As all growers must declare their production by the 25th of November following the harvest, it is very easy to check the declaration of production made by the grower by seeing that his production does not exceed the acreage he owns. As there is a maximum per acre yield permitted, it is easy to detect any excesses which would go over the quantities that are permitted. The accused is tried in the local court, and if any infringement is found, he can be fined or imprisoned. Last year, there were between 400 to 500 such prosecutions.
Nothing in France is very simple. The French have a passion for classifying and refining. This is true in Burgundy too, of course. The Côte d'Or itself is divided into two sections. To the south of the city of Dijon is the Côte de Nuit. Here is the birthplace of the red regal wines of Chambertin, Musigny, and Romanée. But just a moment. Those are Napoleonic marching songs. And why should they be played just now? Because it was Napoleon who had his troops salute when they marched past one of the great vineyards of the Côte de Nuit, the Clos de Vougeot. Napoleon was passionate about many things, and one of them was wine, especially those that came from this great vineyard and from Chambertin. South of the Côte de Nuit starts the Côte de Beaune, taking in the superb wines of Alex Corton and its great Corton vineyards, producing mainly red but also white wine, called Corton Charlemagne. Speaking of white Burgundy, one must never forget Chablis. Chablis is the name of a quiet, happy little country town, 3 hours' drive south of Paris. The very dry Chablis is the perfect wine to have with oysters or fish. The color of this cool wine should be pale yellow, with a faint green tinge. The smell should be clean and fresh. I also commend to you the white wine of Meursault. These are less well known than many other white Burgundies. Hence they are a good value and are a marvelous all-purpose white wine. The wines of Beaune are characterized by their rounded softness. Beaune wines, which are not considered good enough to bear the label of a particular vineyard, are sold in the shops simply as Beaune. South of Beaune begin the vineyards of Pommard, probably the best known of the Burgundies, because its name is so easy to remember. Another reason is the fact that a great deal of it is produced. We come now to one of the greatest white wine producing vineyards of the world, those which produce the divine Montrachet. But where are we? We are in the village of Puligny. The great vineyards are up behind the town. The great vineyard of Montrachet is on the right of the road, and on the left lies the vineyard with the curious name of Bâtard Montrachet. Bâtard Montrachet, Chevalier Montrachet, and Montrachet are the greatest of all white Burgundies and among the greatest white wines in the world. The vineyard of Montrachet itself contains only 19 acres. These 19 acres can scarcely fill the world's demand for Montrachet. 1.5 hours' drive south of Montrachet, in the southern Burgundy region of the Beaujolais, we come upon the vineyards that produce the very popular white Burgundies called Puy-Fuissé. Moulin-à-Vent, along with Fleury and Bruy, have consistently been among the best Beaujolais exported. But in France, the best-known Beaujolais is called Chirouble. Beaujolais is one of the most widely drunk red wines in the world. It is excellent when young, even less than a year old. Most of it is drunk throughout the world as Beaujolais. The better ones would be Beaujolais Superior or Beaujolais Village. The top ones would be sold under the village names. One Beaujolais which stands travel very well indeed is Fleurien, is the most typical Beaujolais available in the United States. Other fine Beaujolais come from the villages of Morgon, where the Chateau de Pizet is situated, and from Bruy, B-R-O-U-I-L-L-Y, Bruy. In hot weather, many of the lighter Beaujolais taste better when chilled, and vintages in the Beaujolais mean less than they do in the heart of Burgundy, in the Côte d'Or, for example. Beaujolais is light and refreshing, and you don't sip Beaujolais. You swallow large draughts of it. This is not true of the other Burgundies, of Corton, for instance, and one would certainly not guzzle the Chambertins or the Cortons. These are definitely to be sipped, to be savored, and each drop cherished, and you will never forget them.